Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome into the TDN Fantasy Podcast, the post Super Wild Card Weekend edition of the show. There is still one more game to be played. Technically, as we are starting the recording of this show, there is one more game in progress. Jamie and I feel extremely comfortable talking about all of the games that have happened on Super Wild Card Weekend, both Saturday and Sunday.
If the Steelers come back and win this game, I'll quit the show, Chris.
Okay, so there you have it. You now know that if the show ends and it's just me signing off, you know what happened to Jamie. You know what happened to the Chiefs. You know what happened to the Steelers. Lots of football to get into. Lots of coaching decisions, coaching blunders.
Yeah.
There's a lot to get into over the five games that we had over the weekend. So very excited to get into that. But got to tell you, listen, we got divisional round coming up. We got conference championship. We got Super Bowl week coming up as well. Bet online, your spot, your place to bet on all of the football action. They remain your number one spot for all the best sports wagering action for 2022. New year, new updated desktop and mobile website. And when you sign up today, you will receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. The promo code is BELEAV. That's BLEAV. Bet online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. Bet online, where the game starts. Jamie, we go back all the way. You're going to have to go back all the way to Saturday afternoon for the first game that we have to talk about here on the show.
It feels like 2 weeks ago.
Considering all the things that have happened since that game, yes, that game felt like it happened in week 14 of the regular season. The Bengals hold on. They make a stand on fourth and goal, the final play of the game, to win 26-19 in a football game that had a lot going on, had a lot of interesting decisions there late in the fourth quarter. You're going to hear that theme a lot over the course of some of the games that we are going to talk about here. Jamie, big win for the Bengals, their first playoff win in 31 years. That is not a typo. That is not a misprint. Their first win in 31 years in the postseason. It is Joe Burrow, Zach Taylor, and company that get the job done. I pass the baton to you, my friend. Where would you like to start in breaking this one down?
It's the first Bengals victory you and I have ever seen while alive in the postseason. Like, that's,
isn't that crazy? That's pretty crazy.
Especially considering like how many fairly decent years the Marvin Lewis Bengals had.
They made the playoffs. They played my team in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I watched them play a playoff game
with Dalton and Palmer. And it's interesting. You go back to thinking about like the year they had with Palmer there, and then Kimo Van Olhoffen falls into Palmer's knee. And in a game that I thought that the Bengals were probably could have been better team in that game. It's crazy to think about, but where else can we start here? We need to talk about the entire last series of this game, because it got off to a bad start and ended even poorly. The first down play, and what we're talking about here, is as much as we, you know, the Raiders fought back, got themselves in position, spike it on first and goal, which was an intriguing decision with a little bit more than 30 seconds left. So it only gives themselves three plays at the end zone instead of four. And then the fourth down play is curl flats, where they have Waller and Renfro running flat routes nowhere near the end zone. They have, what, Zay Jones, and who was the other option? Was it Foster Moreau? I didn't see who the other inside catcher was running curls, but Zay Jones doesn't run a curl into the end zone and ends up getting picked off. And
if he catches that ball, he doesn't get in the end zone either. So if the play works as designed,
correct,
he does not get in. The game is over. The Bengals still have their first playoff win in 31 years. The design was horrible. And again, Jamie, to back up to the spike play on first down, it wasn't as if it was a massive gain, right, where the Derek Carr takes a shot down the field from midfield and it's down inside the 10-yard line and they got to get up there and clock it. They had been moving down the field and it was not a big gain. It wasn't like they were in a rush that seconds were so precious. They were right there. He could have very calmly, very quickly called a play. Derek Carr is very good at this. He's been in these situations before. It's not like this is unfamiliar territory for the Raiders and Derek Carr. They showed that the statistic. He was like 7-for-13 in his career when having the ball in the fourth quarter on a drive to either tie the game or to win the game. He's pretty good in these spots. And he could have very easily just called a play, a little quick out, try to get out of bounds, stop the clock. If it's an incomplete pass, oh, so be it. But
you don't even need to really stop the clock there. Like, you could run a play in the middle. I mean, you don't want to get tackled on the field of play, but you could have.
But you could.
Like, it wouldn't have ended the game. You still would have had plenty of time to run multiple plays there. It was odd because everybody got up and set really quickly. Like it was one of those scenarios where everybody was kind of in position. I'm surprised they didn't have a second play call there, ahead of time. But alas, at the end of the day, they made a real heck of a run here. I mean, this is when you talk about particularly off the field stuff that the Raiders franchise had to go through this season. It was a lot. Obviously the John Gruden stuff, the Henry Ruggs, Damon Arnett, even the Nate Hobbs stuff a little bit that happened right before the postseason. Like this was a franchise that had to go through a lot, and Rich Bisaccia deserves a ton of credit. I know you and Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs talked about this on the latest one of the Draft Dudes podcast from last week, why Bisaccia earned a vote for you, a fifth place vote in our Coach of the Year thing at thedraftnetwork.com. But I don't think he's going to be the coach there next year. I think he's done enough to deserve the job, but I feel like this is a team that's going to want to make a quote unquote splash hire, and keeping your interim coach and promoting him to full-time coach isn't a splash hire. But I got to give the Raiders a lot of credit. This was a team that was sitting at 500 midseason, didn't have a coach, had their, I guess I should say number three, number one deep threat, number three pass catcher, get a DUI and kill somebody. It was just one of those years where everything could have gone off the rails for them completely. And they ended up making that run into the postseason. And you got to give them a lot of credit for it. They've got a lot of change coming this offseason, though. What's up with Mayock? Where's the head coach going? Does Derek Carr want out? Do they want Derek Carr? I mean, there's a lot of change that is coming to Vegas roster over the summer.
They could have very easily finished the season with a losing record and have missed the playoffs. And I think everyone would have understood that there just had been so much that had gone wrong and had gone against that team the entire season that, no surprise that this season ended the way that it did. But you got to give credit to the leaders in Bisaccia and in Derek Carr, just to name two of the leaders that that team had, to rally them and get them to a point where they had the ball in the final seconds, the final play of the game, with a chance to send it into overtime in the postseason. By the way, I think they would have gone for two if they would have gotten it. I think they would have gone for the win right there on the road to try to take care of business and win that playoff game. Certainly I would if I was the coach.
They didn't I get hope that opportunity. They wouldn't have, because I had a ticket on the game going overtime.
Yeah, well, your bets this week were
I was almost a multi-thousandaire.
Yeah, almost.
Almost doesn't count for shit.
0 for 4? 0 for 4 this weekend, I believe.
So I missed out on an 11-leg parlay by one. I missed out on 2 5-leg parlays by one. I missed out on an overtime bet by one play. Other than that, it's been fantastic.
It's been dandy. Jamie.
Fabulous. I did okay in DFS, though.
I should
get to the Bengals here. We should talk about Cincinnati, the team that won this game.
Well, they're
going
to play. We're going to talk about them next week, too. But, yeah, an incredible performance by them. I'm surprised Jamar Chase. Taylor didn't go for it, by the way, with about 6 minutes left. Takes the field goal to go up two possessions. I thought he was going to go for it because he goes for it. Game's basically over at that point. But kicks the field goal, makes it a two-possession game. And then the Raiders decide to, down two possessions with like 5 minutes left, go on the slowest drive when you have to have urgency. Yeah. I've ever seen a coaching staff employ. They will burn one of their timeouts. They were just nonchalant about it. But listen, credit where credit is due.
And they still had a chance to win. But look, right. Jamar Chase, Joe Burrow, excellent in this game. CJ Uzoma was a true X factor for this team. There was that one throw over the middle of the field, a laser from Burrow to CJ Uzoma, that was just not fair. Like, Uzoma was laughing on his way to the ground as he was being tackled. Like, it was that ridiculous. Really exciting. Them versus Tennessee next round. It's going to be interesting because everybody's going to be so focused, and everybody's already decided that Buffalo and Kansas City is the quote-unquote real AFC championship. But Cincinnati, Tennessee is going to be a really, really fun game, particularly if Derrick Henry comes back and plays in that matchup.
The next game up that we are going to talk about, I will admit, I will raise my hand here on the show. I was doing some things Saturday afternoon. I was not in my home watching the Bengals Raiders game. I decided, you know what, this is my chance. I will leave the place that I am at. I will head home. I will get myself set up for the evening so I can enjoy the game from the comfort of my own couch. I got home. I turned the game on. I sat myself down on the couch in my living room. And I watched Devin Singletary score to make it 27-0. I proceeded to get up. I hit the remote on my TV channel and I went and watched a movie, Jamie, because that was it. Because I had seen enough from this Patriots offense over the last month of the season with Mac Jones to know that there was no chance, Vince McMahon, no chance in hell that they were going to come back down 27-0 on the road against Buffalo. It was all she wrote. 47-17? No, that score is not even indicative of how much of a blowout this was. The Bills were all over this football team, scored on every one of their drives, scored all sorts of touchdowns. They had the backups in the game. This Bills team's peaking at the right time, Jamie.
I was so excited for this game, too. Yeah, well, I believe I said
on our
preview. How
quickly did your excitement go away?
Very quickly. I believe I said this on the podcast as well. This was the game I thought was going to be the most enjoyable game of Wild Card Weekend. And it was, well, I was going to say it's the least enjoyable game of Wild Card Weekend, but I don't know if I could say that. I had to watch Eagles Bucks, which we'll get to in a second, which was an absolute disaster. And this night game ain't any better. As Travis Kelce, as we talk right now, is throwing. I mean, they don't even care so much. Travis Kelce's throwing touchdowns to Byron Pringle. That's how bad this Sunday night game has become for them. But look, from this game, I don't think it's hyperbole to say that's probably the best offensive game I've ever seen a team play from Buffalo's standpoint. Never punting.
They didn't punt.
The only
they
negative play was a
over.
Kneel down.
They didn't kick. Oh, but Jamie, they didn't punt. They didn't kick a field goal. And they didn't turn the ball over. You want to talk about offensive efficiency?
What more you can ask for?
Yeah, you can't do any better than that.
And it's funny because like the next day, like Brian Daboll had interviews. And it must have been like, what is he going to say? Like, did you watch the game last night?
This is what you do. You log in because obviously as the coach, you have access to the NFL Game Pass library a little bit earlier than everybody else. You in the Zoom meeting, you ask the host of the meeting, hello, can you allow me to share my screen? And you share your screen and you just put up the highlights and
the condensed, the 45-minute condensed game and be like, just watch this. I'll be back in 45 minutes. We'll talk. If you have any questions, you let me know.
You let me know. That's what I would have done. That's it. I rest my case.
Bears head coach, Brian Daboll. I mean, what more is there to say about this Buffalo team? Absolutely phenomenal. Dawson Knox, if they're struggling against New England in the regular season, did not struggle. He catches a throwaway for a touchdown in the back of the end zone. But to me, the big story is Devin Singletary, because if there's one thing this team was unable to do last year and for up until about 3 weeks ago this year, any semblance of an effective running game. And he's been really good. Really good for them. Obviously, they didn't need to have a ridiculous running game here because Josh Allen was just beating them up himself in a one-man band here. But they're going to need a solid running game if they're going to compete with the Chiefs. And I'm really, really, really looking forward to this game because both teams are relatively healthy, particularly with their star players. And I'm excited to see what these two Stallions go head-to-head here for a shot in the AFC Championship game.
We will move to the Sunday games, three of them to discuss here on the show. The first one of the day, the Bucs beat the Eagles 31-15. It wasn't this close. The Bucs had a 31-0 lead when the fourth quarter started, some garbage time touchdown from the Eagles. But Jamie, I'm absolutely stunned that a team whose all nine of their wins came against teams with losing records when they matched up against a really good team.
Didn't the Eagles beat the Saints? So technically, Saints were 9-8. Technically, they had a win.
When most, if not all, of your wins came against teams without a winning record, when you were faced with an elite team, one of the top teams, one of the top contenders in the NFC, I am stunned that this team struggled. And Jamie, I said it to you. You and I were going back and forth off of the microphones. You and I share thoughts throughout these games. And I said to you, it is really tough to run the offense that the Eagles want to run when you are down two scores, three scores very, very quickly. And that's where the Eagles found themselves in. And once you're down 17, 21 points, it's really tough to run the ball and go on these long drives. You got to score. You got to score quickly. And they were not able to do that.
No, they were all discombobulated from the start here. They get down 14-0 in the first, and you know,
Devonta Smith. Sorry, not to cut you off, but Devonta Smith doesn't get his first target till like 2 minutes to go in the first half, which was ridiculous.
Same thing with Goddard. Like, there's a long stretch in that first half with no targets to Goddard or Devonta Smith. Look, this game, the Eagles were completely and utterly outmatched in pretty much every facet of the game, including coaching. By the way, this was not a great game for Nick Sirianni. This was not a great game for Jalen Hurts. And I thought both of them deserved equal amounts of blame for like least valuable people for the Eagles in this game. Jalen Reagor might get cut based off this game. That's kind of got to be the final straw for him. But look, the reality is the Eagles were completely outmatched. in this matchup, even as banged up as the Buccaneers were. Obviously, no Leonard Fournette, no Chris Godwin, no Antonio Brown. Tristan Wirfs gets hurt, comes back, gets hurt again. Ryan Jensen gets hurt, comes back. Their backup right tackle gets hurt, comes back. Like the Bucs were really banged up, and they were still head, shoulders, and knees, and toes above the Eagles in this game.
And Tom was not sharp in the first quarter. He was not. He was missing some throws. He was not totally accurate. The door was open for the Eagles to keep this thing competitive and to put some pressure. They couldn't get anything going offensively. And then you give Brady that many opportunities, he's going to all of a sudden figure it out. He's the greatest of all time for a reason. And they did. And Jamie, I love it. And rightfully so, they are missing a lot of weapons. But I do think everybody kind of in all of this forgot, hello, Mike Evans is still a thing. He's still a very, very, very good wide receiver. Correct. And he has a big day as well. 9 catches, 117 yards, and a touchdown. They used him a
phenomenal.
Bunch.
Still somehow underrated. Like, Mike Evans is on a path to go to Canton. And I don't think people realize how good he has been from pretty much the go with a lot of different quarterback options there. I want to give the Buccaneers defense a little bit of credit here as well. Like you said, if you didn't watch this game, you see the 15 on the scoreboard. Not indicative of how dominant of a force that this defense was in this game. Jordan Whitehead was flying all over the place.
Yeah,
they were physical. They were decisive. Yep. They were making plays. And yes, as bad as I thought the game plan was and as bad as I thought Jalen Hurts was, at least half the reason for as bad as they looked was how good the Buccaneers defense was. And Todd Bowles, aside, you know, in those first three quarters, when he's aside from the garbage time, because if you remember, they had that big garbage time kind of comeback against Tampa in the regular season game. Bowles and that defense have been really, really strong against Jalen Hurts and this Eagles team. And, you know, the Buccaneers are going to play the winner of the Monday night game. They're going to host them. It should be a really interesting matchup. We'll see when the schedule isn't fully out yet, but I'm excited to see when that takes place. I'm assuming that's going to be a Sunday game because I don't think they want the teams that are playing on Monday night to play on a Saturday. I imagine that's going to be one of the Sunday games.
Jamie, in a playoff game that, considering the two fan bases, is going to be one of the most watched games of the weekend. Also,
it's
going to
be the most talked about game of the weekend.
It might be the game that set the NFL back 15, 20 years with the way that the fourth quarter was coached by both teams.
But the whole game.
Can we just set it up? Let me just set it up first, please. Yes. The 49ers beat the Cowboys 23-17. Okay, I've now told you who's won if maybe you didn't watch any of the games today. Go ahead, Jamie. Please talk about the lovely coaching that we saw today
and this entire weekend. These are supposed to be the best of the best, right? Like, we're supposed to be in the playoffs. The officiating in this wild card weekend was atrocious.
Can you help me with something on the officiating? So we do this thing where we take the best of the best officials. And then we remove them from the crews that they're good with, the crews that they've worked the entire season with. And then we put different crews together for playoff games. And we wonder why we have the problems like we did. Because, by the way, can we back up for a second? Again, because this game felt like it happened 6 months ago, I forgot that I wanted to bring this up. You mentioned officiating. There were back-to-back plays in the Cincinnati Vegas.
Yeah, the whistle. There's so much bad officiating. We forgot about the Tyler Britt whistle.
So you had the whistle play, which they defended postgame. But then we had the two plays back-to-back that I messaged you about, in which Brian Edwards makes a catch that they rule incomplete. And then whatever rule we have where wherever New York can get involved, they get involved and they say, no, that's actually a catch. Can you please fix it? And then they fix it. Then on the very next play, which was such a great juxtaposition of how poor the officiating is in the NFL and this idea of that we want to get it right. On the next play, Hunter Renfro makes what appears to be a catch up the left sideline. And the moment you looked at one replay, you know that he didn't get both feet down, make a football
very
move.
Very clearly it was not a catch.
And all of a sudden, here come the Raiders running up the field, trying to spike the ball so that they are trying to run a play so that they don't have to, that this can't get challenged. And now all of the onus is now on the Zach Taylor and his sideline to very quickly throw a challenge flag. If the idea is to get it right, then let's get it right. Because it's just ridiculous that you force a coach to potentially throw a challenge flag in this spot. If he doesn't know, if his replay guy can't get to him in enough time, that's ridiculous. If you're going to get it right, get it right. And I thought those plays being back-to-back was absurd. And then you had the whistle thing. Sorry, we totally forgot to touch on this earlier. It was ridiculous.
It was just absolutely brutal all weekend long. And this game, and we're back to the Niners-Cowboys game here, like, between both teams, I mean, look, the Cowboys were clearly the worst coached of the group.
Franchise record for penalties in a postseason game.
What? Yeah, what is it, 17?
They had,
what was the number
of penalties? They had 14 before, I think, the Gregory hold. So I think they ended up with 15 penalties. I will check, though, as the host of the show. I feel like I should have those.
So 14 is what they...
okay, so 14 penalties.
But there were 23 total penalties in this game. Accepted penalties. I'm not sure. I don't see what the unaccepted ones might have been. But it was a disaster. Two teams that I thought... extremely poorly coached for most of this game, particularly in the second half. Like, I don't know what San Francisco was doing for half this game. At least the Cowboys were consistently terrible from the opening whistle to the final drive. They were consistently terrible, literally to the final play, making coaching blunders. But San Francisco absolutely let them get back in this game, slash Jimmy Garoppolo.
One of the worst interceptions you'll ever see a quarterback throw. I don't know what he's doing on that play.
It was just a weird game. But like, to me, I look at this, and we talked about this on the preview show, and this is why it was so difficult for me to kind of – and I went back and forth like six times when we talked about this. San Francisco's first half of this game was exactly what I – if you were a Cowboys fan, what you feared. Which, and it was what I was worried about when I was going to pick the Cowboys or not pick the Cowboys, was that I thought they'd be able to run the ball very effectively, and I thought they would work Brandon Ayuk on some double moves on Trevon Diggs. And by the way, it worked. And I'm sorry, Trevon Diggs does not deserve to be an All-Pro. I don't even think he deserves to be a Pro Bowler. I know he got the 11 picks. He's one of, from a coverage standpoint, he's one of the worst cornerbacks in the league. I just flat out said it. Sorry.
He did not have a good game.
Send your hate mail to me.
And as somebody who gave him a fifth place vote for Defensive Player of the Year, I would like to resubmit my ballot, if that would be okay with the
take
person
him off your list.
Who looked at the ballot.
If Trevon Diggs had 5 picks this year instead of 11, we'd be talking about him as a draft.
Correct.
List, just like we were last year. So just something to kind of keep in mind there. But it's not about Trevon Diggs. He's not the reason why they lost this game. I would not be surprised if by the next time we do this podcast, the Cowboys have a new head coach. Whether that's deserved or not, it's probably not deserved, but if Jerry Jones wants to avoid losing Kellen Moore, and look, they face a very real possibility if they retain Mike McCarthy that both Dan Quinn and Kellen Moore are gone this offseason.
I don't know. Whatever Kellen Moore drew up on that last play of that game, I think is going to disqualify him from any Zoom interviews or being a head coach for a little bit.
No, can we look, Kellen Moore didn't have a game either, by the way.
Can we talk about the fourth quarter just from the Cowboys' perspective just for a second? There were three things that baffled me in the fourth quarter. The Cowboys are down 16 points. They run a fake punt to pick up the first down.
Yeah.
And what this genius coaching staff decides to do.
They did what they tried to do what Arizona did to them. And then they messed it up.
They run the no huddle with their punt unit and get everybody up to the line. Because what they're trying to do is they're trying to force the 49ers into calling a timeout. And Kyle Shanahan company said, yeah, bet. We dare you to run a play. We trust our guys. We dare you to run a play. We dare you. So what do the Cowboys do? Okay. Now we're going to get our offense on the field. And now they can't get the offense on the field and get the ball snapped in time, so they take a delay of game penalty. You are down 16 points at home to a team that you probably should be beating when you compare the way the two teams have played this season. You're down 16 points at home. You've been poorly coached. You've committed penalties on all over the place. And now you're getting cute and running plays that you haven't run the entire season here in the fourth quarter of a playoff game with your season on the line, down 16. Mike McCarthy deserved to get fired just for that decision alone.
And by the way, for those that were complaining about the umpire getting in the way.
Okay. We'll get to that play. We'll get there.
No. Because people were complaining about that for this play too. The rule is when the offense makes substitutions, the defense is allowed an opportunity to make substitutions. So by Dallas making the decision with less than 20 seconds on the play clock to completely run a new group of 11 on the field.
The ump's got to hold the ball.
The defense is allowed an opportunity to see the personnel and match personnel. And the offense is not awarded any extra time to do this. So if you have to, and this happens, by the way, several times a season, usually not in these prominent of a moments, but where offense makes a late substitution, ends up having to take a delay a game or a timeout because they're not able to snap the ball because they have to let the defense make a substitution. So that was the correct play. By the way, both of them were correct plays by officials in terms of how this goes. And we'll talk about how this game ends.
So now we get to the second weird decision. I believe the score was 23-7 at this time, I believe. And the Cowboys decide, down 16 in the fourth quarter, I think there was like, I don't know, 8 or 9 minutes left, to kick a field goal. to cut the already two possession game to
a two possession game.
Checks notes, two possession game. Because Mike McCarthy is apparently just not allowed to go for it on fourth down, doesn't believe in it. So then you had that decision, which, by the way, almost cost them. If it wasn't, if Jimmy G doesn't throw the interception, that decision right there would have cost them the game. Because they wouldn't have gotten the ball back with any chance.
No, if Jimmy doesn't forego the wide open
player right in front of him
to literally throw it to a cowboy, then yeah, they never get the ball back.
They never touch the ball again. So that's decision number two. Then decision number three, with 14 seconds left, not a timeout, the 49ers openly playing a defense. I don't think I've seen a defense play in a while in which they are like security guards blocking the sideline off. The entire middle of the field is available to the Cowboys, but they don't have a timeout on third and inches, fourth and inches, whatever it was. Kellen Moore, Mike McCarthy, whoever's the play caller there.
It's Kellen Moore. Calls a QB draw.
Decides to run a QB draw with his quarterback, who takes it a little bit too far down the field, slides, and then they can't get the snap off to have one more play.
So keep in mind, here's the context of it. They're able to move the ball down because San Francisco, for whatever reason, forgot that they should probably guard the sidelines for the entire last drive there. So this ball's on the plus 40 for Dallas. And at this point,
they would have had a shot at the end zone anyway.
That's the thing. You have the, you, here's the scenario that they have. You have two shots from the 40, or what they were trying to draw up. Let's pretend it worked perfectly. The perfect thing there is Dak doesn't slide at the 25. Dak slides at the 30. They get up, they clock it, they run one play. Even that to me is incorrect. I would take two shots from the 40 before I would take one from the 30, or even one from the 25. Let's pretend they had five extra seconds. I would still take two shots from the 40 before I would take one shot from the 25, given the fact that they've thrown 80 gajillion penalty flags in this game. And again, I'm not a math major, but two is better than one. And I'd love to see what the probability difference between converting that from the extra 15 yards would be. But it was now so obvious to me how the Falcons blew that 28-3 lead watching Shanahan and Dan Quinn at different points in this game just attempt to just like make no sense. I get it.
And by the way, the only reason why the Cowboys got the ball back was because on a fourth and inches, after we had a lengthy review to determine the spot of the ball, the 49ers had an illegal formation on a QB sneak that gave the Cowboys the ball back. It coaching blunders all over the place. Penalties,
it was a disaster. It was a disaster.
An absolute dumpster fire. The final 4 minutes of that game, it was like watching the final 30 seconds of an NBA game. It took forever.
This was such a weird, again, this is supposed to be the best of the best teams, coaches, officials.
Not in this
super
game.
Super wild card weekend did not live up to that hype.
And now this is
the last game, which
go
was
to
as
Lambeau.
Bad as we expect.
Yeah. They got to go to Lambeau, potentially without Bosa, without Warner, who, by the way, both get hurt in this game.
Although Warner kind of, I mean, well, I'm going to see Warner. Warner was jumping up and down the sideline. Warner looked okay. Yeah,
it did feel like if that game.
Bosa will see concussion depending on when the. So the schedule isn't out yet, but I've kind of, one of my favorite things to do is to try to predict, is to incorrectly, because I'm almost never right, but I predict what they're going to do schedule wise. I believe there are two Fox games next week, along with one CBS and one NBC. We've already talked about how I feel like the Monday night winner versus Tampa has to be a Sunday game, because I don't think they're going to want a team to do a Monday, Saturday turnaround. So it kind of feels like if that's the case, that San Francisco Green Bay has got to be the night game, right? It's got to be that Saturday night game.
So do you do Bills Chiefs 4:30 Saturday, and then you do 49ers Packers, and then on Sunday you have Titans Bengals, and then Cardinals Rams Bucks.
Yeah, because I'm trying to see also that. Where like the only other thing to take into consideration here. Is do they want to make sure everybody's got like, as I'm trying to say, it's not really like an equal rest scenario because they're going to all play them. So that's my running theory right now. Because I imagine you're going to get a Fox game and an NBC game on Saturday and then a CBS and a Fox game on Sunday.
That would be the prevailing wisdom, yes.
So yeah, so that I'm of the mind that we are looking at I guess they have put both conferences on at the same time before. Like they have gone NFC, NFC, AFC, AFC before. So they can do whatever the hell they want. But yeah, I actually think that we could actually be in a spot where we get both major games on Saturday. We get the both huge games, Kansas City, Buffalo, and Green Bay, San Francisco on Saturday. It's possible.
And it would be a lot of fun. Jamie, there's one more game for us to talk about. Do you feel comfortable talking about it? Do you feel okay?
I do.
There's 7 minutes left, and the Steelers are down 21 points. So,
yeah, I mean, it's nice, but like this, it's over. It's over.
For a moment, they played well in the first quarter. I thought, oh boy, what's going on?
Yeah, this was a 7-0 Pittsburgh game at one point. And
they had turnovers, defensive touchdown, everything you need when you're on the road looking for an upset. The Steelers had the momentum going early. And then
they don't have?
The Chiefs recognized, oh, we have Patrick Mahomes, we have Travis Kelce, we have Andy Reid, we're good at this offense thing. Yeah, yeah. Let's go score a bunch of points.
We have Patrick Mahomes in an offense, and they have a crumbling pile of dust at quarterback. That's what they realized. And look, did we expect anything different? Like, did we really, in our heart of hearts, the second that your boy Brandon Staley put us in this scenario?
What has happened? Why have I become the Brandon Staley defender at TDN?
Because I know it gets under your skin.
It does, because people are idiots. People don't understand what happened in the fourth quarter of that football game and in the last couple of minutes. And they also don't understand about Brandon Staley and being aggressive in analytics in the first place. Don't get me started. We're at the end of the show. Don't do this. Okay.
So when your boy Brandon Staley called that timeout that changed the course of NFL history.
You're the worst. You're the worst person.
It forced us to watch this dumpster fire of a Steelers offense play in a playoff game at night. Yeah, this is what we got. This is what we got.
Again, it played out exactly, barring the beginning of the game, it played out exactly the way you thought. The Chiefs were at home. The Chiefs are a better team. The Chiefs have more offensive weapons. The Chiefs are a more talented football team. The Steelers don't have enough to keep up, and that's exactly the way it played out. Over the course of four quarters, the Chiefs did enough. The Steelers could not answer. It's that simple.
Yeah. Just overall dominant performance. One thing that is interesting to note, though, is that Darrell Williams had a terrible game.
Did you notice how when the game started, Jerick McKinnon was the starter from the get-go at running back?
Yeah.
Which was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll see if Clyde Edwards-Helaire comes back, next week, and we'll see. But just an overall dominating performance from Kansas City. And actually, so it's so much so I don't even want to talk about it anymore. I want to talk briefly about the opening lines that I've just received from our good friends at Bet Online. So, you can use that promo code. Was it Believe?
Believe, BLEAV.
That you can use that right now if you want to actually get ahead and bet on some of these games, Chris. But like last week, I'm going to make you guess. So,
okay, I do not have
obviously
it open.
We don't have a line yet for the Buccaneers game because we're still waiting for the Rams and Cardinals to play each other.
I don't think it matters. The Bucs are a touchdown favorite against either of those teams.
I bet you they'd be a bigger favorite against Arizona.
I would agree.
So. It's not really a bold take. It's factual. Okay. So here we go. And by the way, if they are right, now I'm not saying these guys are right, but they happen to have.
They are the wise guys for a reason, Jamie.
They have prime next to these games for a reason.
You know what? But Jamie, you got to understand, we're recording a podcast in which there's a game going on in which they could have announced
these things.
And
nobody's
going to
care about this. All right, whatever. You're right. So. But if
by the
wrong,
time you listen to this, you'll know when the times are. But we in the moment of recording this have no idea.
No, we do not. So, all right. So let's start with the game they have first. They're saying the Saturday first game is as predicted. Just kidding. No, not as predicted. Cincinnati at Tennessee. It does not matter what happens. We're not putting Cincinnati in anything other than the first Saturday game. Cincinnati, Tennessee, what do you think the opening spread is?
Tennessee at home is a 5.5-point favorite against Cincinnati.
Only 3.
Wow, just a standard 3 at home? They might be getting Derrick Henry back. I kind of factored that into my number, but that's
I'm assuming they are. This will climb.
I think it's going to kind of settle where I put it at. Not trying to have an ego about it, but
yeah, I mean, right now there's a little bit more juice on the Tennessee side of things, but very interesting.
Yeah, I would take Tennessee in that game. Okay, what's the Saturday night game?
The night game is, as predicted, 49ers at Packers at Lambeau Field.
I have no idea. The Packers, man, the 49ers won a football game today, and I want to make them like 10-point dogs to the Packers on the road.
I will say this. It is not a double-digit spread.
Well, yeah, I think it should be. But I will go that the Packers are 8.5-point favorites at home.
Ooh. You might want to jump on this one then.
Is it 7.5?
4.5.
No, that's ridiculous. Did everybody watch what I watched today?
Only minus 210 on the money line.
The Packers are only minus 210 on the money line? Allow me. I can't use the promo code Believe like everyone else can because I'm not a.
You already used it.
I've already used Bet Online, but you know, okay.
So for those of you interested. And then the big game, which right now is they're saying this is going to be it looks like the later of the Sunday games. Obviously there's not a Sunday night game, but there's early afternoon and then late afternoon, and this will be looks like the late afternoon game. The Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs, which sign me the F up for it. What do you think the spread is here?
I think the standard Bills minus 3.
You think Bills minus 3?
They're in Kansas City. Sorry, my brain. Right, Kansas City. Sorry, let me flip this. Standard Kansas City minus three. That was what I meant to do. Yes.
Close. Minus 2.5. So there's a slight lean to Buffalo on a neutral field, but that's pretty much even. But very interesting little game there. And obviously for the Monday game, as we speak right now, 3.5-point favorites are the Rams for that game with the winner getting to play Tampa Bay.
Can I leave you with two random pieces of information, one of which you and I talked about earlier today, the other which we have not? You're supposed to say yes. You're supposed to say yes. You can.
You're
going to
do it anyway. You don't need my affirmation.
For the bit on the show.
I would love to talk to me about the two things that you are thinking about on the toilet. I don't know what you're doing. Yes.
Three players in NFL history have caught a touchdown and have thrown a touchdown in a playoff game. Do you want to try to take a stab at naming the three players before I tell you the three players? Travis Kelce tonight has done it. That's why he's the third. Nick Foles very famously did it in a Super Bowl with the Philly Special. And for fantasy people, one will stand out to you. Marcus Mariota did it one time in a game in which it was a tipped pass from himself that he caught. Remember this whole big thing? Those are the three players that have caught a touchdown and thrown a touchdown in a playoff game. And then I will leave you with this because Jamie made a prediction earlier in the show. This is a direct quote from a press conference. Quote, "Well, I need to confess. I told Jerry that I watched every play of the 2019 season, but I wanted the job," end quote, McCarthy said with a laugh. Quote, "I haven't watched every play of the season, but you do what you got to do, right?" end quote. That is Cowboys head coach Mike McCarthy talking about how he lied and said he watched every play of the 2019 season in order to get a job as a Dallas Cowboys head coach. And it certainly looked like a guy who did know what he was doing out there in the fourth quarter of that football game. So those are the two things that I leave you with here on the show, Jamie.
I guess.
You think when we do the show on Tuesday, Mike McCarthy's the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys? Are you doubling down on this take that he's out?
Yeah, I do not expect him to be the head coach when we do our next show on Tuesday.
When we do our next show on Tuesday, the third round of Jamie's fantasy football mock draft here on the show. He's making changes I don't think it affects the third round, but some players are declaring to go back to school and they're not coming out for the draft. And so Jamie's got to change some things up here on the board. Again, I don't think it impacts the third round.
No rookies going in the third round here, but
you were making some changes as early as yesterday for Tuesday. So we'll do that. We'll obviously recap Cardinals Rams because that will have happened. That will be in the rearview mirror at that point. We'll preview the week ahead. And Jamie, you know what I thought would be interesting? Mock draft Monday on the draftnetwork.com. Kyle Krabs' mock draft's already up there. I wonder if we take a look at some of the fantasy fits for some players in the first round of that mock draft. If
there's
some fun ones on the Tuesday show as well. Yes, and that's kind of the reason why there's been a lot of talk about that. So I thought that would be interesting as well. Jamie, where can everybody follow you on social media?
Follow me at Jamie Eisner on Twitter and at Jamie Eisner TDN on Instagram.
You can follow me on Twitter at Shoe Radio, SCHU Radio. You can follow the show on Twitter at TDN Fantasy. And Jamie, they have announced it on the television screen Sunday, 6:30 Eastern Time, Buffalo and Kansas City. And then the Rams Cardinals winner against Tampa will be the 3 o'clock game on Sunday. There's your Sunday slate. So our friends over at Bet Online had it exactly right. Everybody enjoy the start of your week. Enjoy the last game of Wild Card Weekend on Monday night. We're back on Tuesday to recap it, get you ready for the next round of the playoffs in round 3 of Jamie's Mock Draft. We'll talk to you then.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.